Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can listen on 92.9 FM ESPN. Or should be, pardon, you can search for 92.9 FM ESPN on the TuneIn Radio app, the iHeartRadio app, as well as the Odyssey app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How's it going?
It's going well, my man. I think Cobb will probably share this with me. We're both heading out of town this weekend, and let's just say I'm feeling it.
Pretty excited. It's a Friday type of move.
Very, very much ready to get out of here. But before we do that, we're, of course, going to taste it, and we'll taste it with David W. Cobb, of course, of CBS Sports. That's his X handle is David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day. Where are you going this week? I'm going to Austin, Texas for a wedding.
It sounds like you've already been to Austin.
This is my second weekend of football season, or second wedding of football season. Like, these people got to stop it, but you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely it sounds like you've already been there.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks.
Yeah, you sound like you've got a toddler.
Yeah, I've got a toddler, mm-hmm. And I've also been around about 100 Chick-fil-A team members and about half of Barron County, Kentucky over
there
the last week. But now I got another wedding, so I'm going to go infect an airplane tomorrow. So anyway, I don't think I'm contagious, honestly.
Heads up. So we will start with the tasting menu. Eric Haustein is going to join us in about 40 minutes or so, get his thoughts on the first couple of preseason games that we've seen with the Grizzlies. We'll get into the list during hour number two. We will welcome Jason Smith at the bottom part of the hour. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But, Cobb, we have a little bit more of a robust Thursday night slate. It's a lot of CUSA, but we also got East Carolina at Tulane. Perhaps maybe another look at what Tulane is. I don't know how you feel. The more I've watched of Tulane, the less I like of them. And I understand they have the Northwestern win, and I understand that they have the Duke win, but I don't know. There's something about them at the line of scrimmage. They're not as physical as I thought they were going to be.
Oh, that's exactly it. Maybe a trap spot against East Carolina. I will say though, they beat Duke.
Can East Carolina on the road be a trap spot? Because I think we all agree, at East Carolina is always a trap spot, no matter what.
Dowdy Ficklin.
Oh,
yeah. That Dowdy Ficklin, Greenville Magic, for sure. I like Tulane tonight. I mean, but this is an interesting game for Memphis. Like, hey, go Pirates, right? Like, if you can kind of get Tulane out of the way, put them in a corner somewhere, don't have to worry as much about them, get them a couple of losses in the league, that'd be fantastic for Memphis. But I do like Tulane against East Carolina because, to me, East Carolina kind of plays the same way as Duke.
Yeah.
Where they air it out. They got a quarterback who they'll throw 40, 45 times. And Tulane beat a Duke team that plays that same way. But yeah, lines of scrimmage, I don't know. I'm not in love with Tulane, same as you.
Also tonight, we have La Tech at Kennesaw State. That's at 6 p.m. on the U. East Carolina at Tulane is on ESPN. Jacksonville State at Sam Houston State on the Network of Stars, CBS Sports Network, 7 p.m. for that. Shout out Phil Longo. You are who I thought you are. We've also got Southern Miss at Georgia Southern. That's 7 p.m. on ESPN2. And then on Thursday night football, we have the New York football Giants going against the Eagles. The fun stat is Jalen Hurts, when favored by a touchdown or more in his last seven starts, is 0-7 against the spread. I don't know. I actually am in a good spot watching the Giants now. Now that they've made the quarterback change, like, I can't really get upset. I can't get depressed. Like, yeah, last week when they scored 14 points to start on the Saints and then weirdly they thought they were a good team, that was banana land to me. Like, they thought that was enough, and then the turnovers mounted, but I don't know.
I was going to say, every time I looked up, there was a New Orleans defender running the opposite direction with the football.
Correct.
Yeah, or, I'm gonna say that y'all should fix that, Jeffrey.
Or there was a New Orleans receiver just running 90 yards.
That too. Yeah, both seem like issues. Neither one of them necessarily related to Jackson Dart. How are you feeling about the Dart experiment?
He did have a fumble last week, a no apparent reason fumble, where he was he had the ball. He was loose with the ball, and he just kind of tossed it. I didn't love that. I mean, it's much more enjoyable to watch because they have a prayer of moving the ball. He still makes mistakes. They're still not perfect. Like, it's still pretty rudimentary, like, what they're asking him to do. But it's a much more watchable product. I think, though, the more interesting side of this game is we've somehow decided the Eagles are in trouble, despite the fact that they're still 4-1. And, I mean, I guess it's the A.J. Brown of it all. So I guess maybe the drama of that makes that somewhat interesting, but I don't know. It's like death taxes. The Eagles are going to beat the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, the teams that I feel like are in trouble, top of that list for me is the Ravens. Like,
you're
1-4. That's a team to me that's in trouble. The Bengals, another team we thought was going to be good. Now, of course, that one's very much injury-related, but they're in trouble. When you're turning into 40-year-old Joe Flacco, you're in trouble. If you're 4-1 and you know, you're not even firing on all cylinders yet, to me, you're in the opposite of trouble. you've got a long way to even get better from 4-1. You know what I mean?
It's also like, does nobody remember last year? They were 2-2, and everybody was like, fire Sirianni. Like, remember we had all this? Like, yeah, they basically then didn't lose another game for like 3 months.
I'm not worried about Philly. There's a lot of other teams in the NFL that I'm worried about. Philly is not on that list.
All right, we got a great Friday slate because I think the game that we have in Denton, Texas, tomorrow night, 6:30. Oh, also, tonight, let's see, 5:08, we have Philly at the Dodgers, and then 8:08, they're doing Milwaukee and Chicago. Shouldn't those games be flipped?
Right, yeah. Why are we playing the West Coast game early and the Central Time Zone game late? I don't know. That does not make sense to me. But I guess
what they're trying to do is they're saying with Philly to pop the biggest number, we need the game to be earlier since they're on East Coast and the Dodgers will just bring its audience no matter what. So I guess that's what they're saying. And then Central Time Zone, like 8:08's a late start, but it's not like a miserably late start.
Did you enjoy seeing the Yankees get eliminated?
Oh my gosh. And then the post-game show with Poppy and Vlad Jr., like the beat the Yankees, like, oh, God, I was all in on it. It all, for me, just keeps stemming back from, like, Yankees fans that acted like Aaron Judge's quest for the AL home run record was a thing just drove me insane.
You talk about Yankees fans. I thought the broadcast did a great job last night of panning to angry Yankees fans.
Fox was elite the entire series of the Yankee crowd shots. And like every time they would pan to the crowd, I'm like, I hate them even more.
Oh, so I forget. It was Wells, the number 8 hole hitter for New York, had this bad strikeout on a 1-2 curveball. I think it was in the 8th inning last night. And on the pitch prior, he had left a bat on his shoulder, and it was like a hittable fastball or something. And they just panned to this Yankees fan just losing his mind, like mouthing, swing the bat, you know, with a couple of obvious expletives in there. And it was you just love to see it. You just love somebody who grew up in the teeth of like the Jeter era Yankees dynasty. It's just always makes me laugh when they struggle.
I'm open to the idea that the Jays are our best shot at beating the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah, they're a wagon, man.
Like,
because
I honestly didn't feel like the Yankees played all that badly, and it just didn't matter. Like, they probably didn't pitch it great in Toronto, but, like, I just kept thinking, like, man, this seems, like, really freaking good.
And then who's the little fella who's about 5'6", 240? Is that the catcher for Toronto? Oh, my gosh. That dude. Like, he looks like he's straight out of a like a cartoon.
Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Love that dude. Love that dude.
Seriously, probably 5'8", 240.
I mean, he like he looks like Pudge, but without the steroids. Excuse me, allegedly. God.
Allegedly.
Only God can know that question. That is, of course, my favorite baseball player of all time, but I do want to be clear. When he was asked about his alleged steroid use, well, only God knows the answer to that one.
That's true.
That's good stuff.
I looked it up. No, Alejandro Kirk, 5'8", 245. Man,
that's a good bit. I'm going to say the years are not going to be kind to that physique.
Most likely not, but my man is having himself a moment right now, and it's awesome. I'm here for it.
All right, so then also on Friday, man, now that the Cardinals are out and sucking, I'm going to my adopted Seattle Mariners. That felt like a game yesterday that you needed to win. I do not really feel like the thing you want to see in an elimination game is Scooble.
Yeah, you know, I'd hate it for the big dumper if this is the end. He's been the best storyline I feel like we've had in a long time, you know?
And it's like his first like real playoff shine, he has just been delivering.
Yeah, that's what makes it so cool. He's everything that you hoped he would be and more, even in the postseason. But at least we get one going to an elimination game. I mean, we'll see. Obviously tonight, like you got a couple of series that are at 2-1. I'd love to see either of these National League series get to a game five. But then the problem is, would either of those games be on Saturday? Because I'm not going to be watching if it's on Saturday.
So, yes, Saturday is the – if necessary, Milwaukee-Chicago would be the early game at 3:38, and then Doyers and Phillies would be 7:08. And you are 100% right. I've been saying this in my group chat. Like, you and I love baseball. The playoffs should be played exclusively Monday through Friday.
They should.
Like,
it's
my thing is, like, I can handle Monday night football and a playoff game, but it's like in the midst of 15 bets going at once. Like, I cannot handle baseball during the middle of a college football Saturday or an NFL Sunday.
Yeah, it's just going to be tough, you know, because that quad box is all the way filled up with college football. Hey, plus, I mean, I'm going to be at the wedding reception doing the whole cell phone viewing sort of thing here, you know.
Well,
can you
Fubo quad box on your phone?
No, I mean, those would be like minuscule viewing.
Yeah,
windows.
But I mean, listen, where there's a will, there's a way.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't rule it out if that were a possibility. But you can only quad box, I think, on Apple TV. It's like a. Anyway, just because you have Fubo doesn't mean you can quad box on every platform, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Apple TV for sure.
All right. Also on Friday night, as mentioned, we got South Florida at North Texas. We'll reference that in just a bit. Rutgers all the way to Seattle to play Washington. Do we think there's any impact on the Mariners game five and the puppies on a Friday night? Because, I mean, I'm laying it with Washington. I'm just keeping my system of whoever's traveling really far, I'm just fading them.
Yeah, I think that's the right approach. It could be a big sports night for Seattle.
And then also one of the worst teams in college football, Colorado State hosts Fresno State. That's the CBS Sports Network game, 8 p.m. All right, South Florida, North Texas. So I decided I'm jumping in with North Texas. When I saw that they canceled classes tomorrow to get everybody in the right frame of mind, like, that's championship effort for me. Now, for Tiger for Tiger fans, I think they've decided, like, they want South Florida to win in the, you know, it's not a great chance, but there's a decent chance when you look at the Saturday that is the South Florida game, undefeated Memphis, South Florida coming in with one loss, and at that point, probably, I mean, what, they're at 24 right now. Like, I mean, it's potentially a top 20 matchup. And so it's entirely possible when you look at the slate that they could wind up being the game day game. I don't know, man. Like, North Texas has been an eye test team for me, and I thought they've passed the eye test, and this will be a really good test because South Florida's good up front. We know that they're a good, if not, like, very good team. Like, I just really am... I'm very fascinated to watch that game tomorrow night, probably from the steakhouse on top of Stream Song Red and Blues Clubhouse.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, you just had to throw that in there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
After shooting 88, but a couple of doubles down the stretch.
Well, here's the thing, man. A Colonial 88 is like an 82 anywhere else.
Colonial 88 is like you hit good shots. You can hit good shots and shoot 88 at Colonial.
Yeah, you introduced me to that experience.
A lot of trouble out there.
It's my highest score of the year, and I didn't even feel like
played
that. No,
we both like came off the course like I didn't think I hit it that bad.
Yeah,
it's hard.
I'm with you. This is a fantastic game for the American. South Florida, North Texas. I think this is great that this game is on Friday night too.
I agree.
It gives the league a chance to flex and be like, "Yo, look at what we got here. We've got two legitimate college football playoff contenders.
Good teams,
two of the best teams in the group of five. Yeah. You know, you mentioned the students being out at North Texas for this game, which means that it's probably going to be a pretty good looking atmosphere on TV. Like those things matter. They influence perception. The Mountain West is going to be going head to head. No offense, CBS Sports Network. But with a terrible game at the same time, you know, so I think this is great for the AAC. And I lean pretty heavily towards South Florida here because I don't know how good that North Texas defense is. Their offense has been great, but their defense has not been great. And South Florida with Byron Brown and Alex Golesh, they got to be licking their chops to go out there and put up a 40 burger.
Since I'm leaving literally as soon as the show ends, I had to do bets today. It's purely a vibes play. Like, the more I've actually thought about it from a football perspective, I think South Florida is probably better, but this is just solely vibes.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, I pick a lot of stuff on vibes, and I am like 10 games above 500 in our CBS Sports expert picks. So, I mean, the vibes can, they can lead you in the right direction sometimes.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that brings us to Saturday. And I think the highlighted game in the early window, it's Alabama and Missouri. And I know we're getting into the Missouri ain't played nobody. But if you've actually watched when Missouri's played, they've been really good. Now, they have not been great at finishing drives. But, like, if you look at the Kansas game, the final score to me was kind of misleading, even with Missouri getting a defensive score. If you actually watched it, like, Kansas had no prayer of stopping Missouri. The only chance that Kansas had was Missouri stopping Missouri. Like, the total yardage was, like, 600 to, like, 270. Like, that's how much it was flipped. It was a similar story in the South Carolina game where they just kept settling for field goals and they nearly doubled them up total yardage. But for me, this is kind of I'm sticking with the SEC's become diet NFL, and Alabama's played two big emotional games back to back. And now you got to go on the road against a team that's pretty much at full strength, and it's their opportunity to flex. Like, I don't know. I just think this game kind of gets weird.
Okay, so I've got a player prop for you, which is Ty Simpson over 285.5 passing yards.
I'm not sure overs in over any player prop in this game. I'm not sure it's a bad play because I'm not sure how much either team's going to stop the other.
Well, because you were right about identifying the fact that Missouri actually did a decent job defensively against Kansas, despite the fact that Kansas scored 31 points because, I mean, yeah, Missouri doubled up Kansas in total yards and all that. However, like the other piece of evidence that you point to in Missouri's favor is that game against South Carolina. Well, Lenora Sellers got hurt in that game, and that obviously had a huge impact on.
I thought Sellers got hurt against Vandy.
Oh, okay. So Sellers played this.
This was the game that was going on concurrently with the Miami-Florida game. And you would look over, like, I feel like, let me paint the picture for a Missouri game. You're going to look up at some point and the score is going to be like 9-6. I swear to God, they miss an extra point or their scores get super weird, but they outgained, this was my favorite part. They outgained Kansas by 341 yards and they outgained South Carolina by 163 yards. They won the South Carolina game by 9 points and they won the Kansas game by 11. And again, that can also be something that bites you, not finishing drives. Like that can totally be something. I'm also interested, like if Alabama goes and handles business, I think I'm officially at the point where I was at the beginning of the year. I took a circuitous route, but I got back to the same spot. I think if Alabama handles business and this is like a comfortable, easy win, I think Alabama's the best team in the league.
Oh yeah, if that's how it goes down, then absolutely. So what I told Gabe yesterday is like, I just need to see it from Missouri. I have no problem
with saying prove it.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with Mizzou. And
sometimes you just have to, like, honestly, like, this is gonna be, I'm on Oregon for the same reason. Like, prove it, Indiana. You go on the road against a team that's got superior athletes. Prove it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so Sellers did play against Missouri. You were right. But he threw for 300 yards. So I'm just saying Ty Simpson over 285 and a half.
I'm telling you, I don't hate any overs in this game.
Yeah. No, but it should be fun. I think it's a kind of a weird matchup. It doesn't feel like we get Alabama at Missouri. I feel like that's one of those SEC games we only get like once every 12 years or whatever. So I am really looking forward to that one.
All right. Also in this window, we have Ohio State at Illinois. Burt catching 14. I don't know. Like, I know it's different in the sense that when Illinois went to Oregon last year, I just kind of have vibes of like, I know they're hosting Ohio State, but this just kind of feels to me like, I think the difference between Ohio State, Oregon, and then the middle class of the Big Ten, or even the upper middle class of the Big Ten, I think it's more than two touchdowns.
Yeah, Ohio State's the best team in college football right now. The betting markets reflect that. They're now a fairly significant favorite to win the national championship. I mean, they are a rung above everyone else. And Julian Sayin, dude, he is playing really freaking well. He's playing some football right now.
I think
and that Illinois team, they gave up 63 to Indiana. So I don't think Ohio State's going to do that. Ohio State isn't from the Kurt Cignetti Indiana school of run up the score, show everyone how great we are. Like Ohio State,
unless they're playing Cignetti, then they will.
Yeah, right. But I'm not saying that Ohio State's going to go out there and put 63 on Illinois like Indiana did, but I think this is kind of a spot for them, similar to last week, where they just sort of slowly grinded Minnesota into the ground. I could absolutely see.
Never forget, Minnesota led that game 3-0.
They did. They did. I could see Illinois.
I thought Fleck was about to pull a Lee Corso when Indiana famously had the lead. Like, they kicked a field goal to take the lead on Ohio State, and he stopped the game, called timeout to take a team picture under the scoreboard. I thought Fleck was going to do that.
Yeah, right. Well, I think Ohio State might be the best team in college football by a significant margin. Like, I think we might be headed towards a back-to-back national champion here for the first, you know, I mean, this would be the second time in 6 years, because Georgia did it in 21. And
I almost wonder if they're better than last year.
I wouldn't shock me. I mean, I think Julian Sam's throwing the ball better than Will Howard was at this point last year.
Now, I want to be fair to Illinois. In the Indiana game, on top of, as Cobb's mentioning, nobody loves to run it up when he smells blood like Cignetti, which is fine if you're going to bet on Indiana. Like, keep everybody happy. They had a bunch of DBs out that game. I think they were like on their fourth and fifth DBs. They're a little bit healthier in this game, but I don't know. Like, to me, I've noticed some SEC people that are trying to push back on Ohio State on the grounds of, well, their only impressive win is Texas, and we know Texas stinks, to which, I don't know. Like, my thing is, if you don't think Ohio State's good, you're just not watching Ohio State. Because every time you watch Ohio State, you're like, oh my God.
What they're doing to teams is uncommon. They
haven't given up more than one touchdown to a team.
Yeah. Nobody has reached double figures against Ohio State. So, and they can turn it on if they want to. That's the thing, is they're elite on both sides of the football. I don't think there's a whole lot of other teams right now in college football that you can say that about. We'll figure out if you can say that about Oregon this week, right?
Yeah.
But I know I can say that about Ohio State.
I'm close to saying it with Miami.
That's true. That's true.
But Miami, I keep wondering, Miami has a little of, we've identified it with the crystal ball, a little of the lack of killer instinct. Like, we saw the Notre Dame game, they didn't put them away, and last week, that was also a Norvell special, the play really hard in the fourth quarter when the game's over and make the final look. I was happy everybody treated that game the way that, like, it played out. Like, Miami was clearly the superior team. All right.
Okay, if you box score scouted it, you don't come away with that impression. But if you watched it,
yeah, you were like,
understand.
this team is so much better. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Also early, we have UCLA getting off the mat, going to Michigan State, UCF at Cincy, the 11:45. We got Washington State at Ole Miss. What's the third best game? Pitt at Florida State.
I would maybe say, just for purposes of, hey, they're getting legit, let's keep an eye on them, like UCF at Cincinnati, because Cincinnati's actually.
By the way, did we nail Cincinnati? You're gonna look up in like the middle of October, like, wait, they're 6-1.
Yeah, that's where they're headed. Like, they could be something. I'm also curious to see Washington State Ole Miss, just because of what's Lane Kiffin gonna do in that quarterback situation when they're up 38-0 in the third quarter. Is Austin Simmons going to get most of that second half? I don't know. Like, I'm just fascinated to see what he does.
I don't know. George and I were talking about this. I think he might go to the third quarterback and stick with the narrative that he's not healthy.
Okay.
Lane being Lane, playing mind games. Now, also, George will confirm this. The Tulane game, I mean, he kept the starters in basically the whole game.
Well, it's a situation where if there's going to be a 10-2 SEC team that has doubt cast upon it come playoff time, it's going to be Ole Miss because of the schedule. So I get it. If he feels like he's got to run up the score or whatever, at the end of the day, I don't think a 10-2 SEC team would get left out. I think Ole Miss would be at risk if it were 9-3 of getting left out. Whereas maybe an Alabama or a Georgia wouldn't, because those teams play harder schedules.
I think the problem Ole Miss has at 9-3 is, in my estimation, there's going to be more 9-3s that will probably have a stronger resume.
Yeah, that's what it is. But, I mean, sure, whatever. Run up the score. It's just be careful doing that, because you've got a two-week stretch coming up pretty soon that is as difficult as any two-week stretch that anybody plays. And that's the season, right? I mean, it's at Georgia, at Oklahoma, right, to close out October for Ole Miss. So I wouldn't play my starters in the second half of this game, knowing that I got that coming up.
I laid 32.5, so I hope he does. All right, now the game at 2:30, like, the day gets going. So we've got Indiana at Oregon, 2:30 Central. We have Red River at 2:30 as well. It's still a little weird. Like, I kind of miss the days when Red River was at 11 a.m. and the game was still going on at 5.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the six-hour Red River with just all the commercial breaks, all the scoring. Very different Red River. Also, Iowa State's in a little bit of a tricky spot heading to Colorado. That number keeps dropping. Iowa State, if you got a look at them last week, like, their injuries are really, really piling up. Another interesting one in the Big 12 with TCU at Kansas State. We got Petrino's first game again. I don't know. How are we deciding? Like, how are we labeling this? Interim Bobby's first game at Tennessee?
Yeah. honestly, it feels like they want it to be the beginning of his second tenure. It feels like that's the outcome everybody wants.
I think some people do. I think this is an Arkansas. I think the Little Rock people want Bobby to get it. But I'm not sure the other power brokers do.
Well, if he wins on the road at Tennessee, they'll give him the job on Monday.
My problem with this is like, he can want the job all he wants, like, and he can fire all the defensive people. Cobb, like, they still have the same defensive players.
Well, that's the biggest issue with Arkansas in this era, is that there's been zero defensive stability in the portal era. I mean, it's just a revolving door every single year on that defense. So, yeah, I mean, what is Bobby Petrino's grand plan if he gets the job? Like, how do you fix that? I don't know.
If I know Bobby like I think I do, it's going to be to spend even more money on offense. Also in this window, that's really the Arkansas-Tennessee game. Okay, so I think let's start with Indiana-Oregon. Like, to me, I'm in the same spot that you are with Missouri with Indiana. Like, this is the prove-it-to-me spot. Like, prove to me when you go on the road against a team that you're not decidedly better than, and show me something.
Yeah, I know, but like at least with Missouri, it's like you're at home against a team that has shown flaws. The difference here is Indiana is on the road against an Oregon team that's been dang near perfect.
I'm not even saying they have to win. I'm just saying, like, don't get blown out.
No, okay. I mean, then in that case, absolutely. I think in some respects, a 35 to 20, you know, 24 loss, if it looks pretty enough, might actually.
As long as it's not the Notre Dame version where he was running tempo and got a couple onside kicks, like where they ended up, they didn't cover, but they, like, I want it to be like Oregon just pulls away late because they're better. Like, I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like what it's going to be is that playoff game against Notre, like, you know, that game you're talking about is where they are clearly not a match physically for the opponent. And they find a way offensively to make it respectable in the end or gimmick their way to a respectable final score. Like, that's my expectation for this game. Who would have thought last week that UCLA would take down Penn State? I mean, the Big Ten could still have some surprises up its sleeve. This is a huge day for the league. I mean, we'll get to it in the evening window, but Michigan-USC as well. So, I mean, in some respects, I actually think it would be good for the Big Ten if Indiana won this game because – it makes that conference interesting, more interesting for longer, because we are very, very close to it being Oregon, Ohio State, huge gap, everybody else. And if Indiana won this game, hey, we're not exactly there yet. It's going to be a free for all here over the final half of the season.
All right, then Red River. I assume you're like me. You do not think John Mateer is playing.
I don't know. I mean, I genuinely don't know. I mean, it seems like.
This feels, I guess this would be my argument. This feels like Venables being football guy, because I mentioned this to our audience. I bet Kent State against Oklahoma, so I wound up watching a decent amount of that game. They dressed Mateer, and then all of a sudden, we get the Chipotle story this week, and all of a sudden they're leaking that, he might give it a go. I think if he really were giving it a go, they would keep it as close to the chest as possible.
No, that's probably true. I think that's a good way to look at it. Typically, if you want to surprise them with a player like that, you know, you would hold that info close to the vest. But I don't know, man. Even still, even if it's Michael Hawkins, am I crazy to think that Oklahoma's
defense?
Well,
I'm not saying you're crazy, because neither he stinks. He's real bad. Like, I'm not sure he's better than any quarterback in the league other than maybe Kentucky.
Wow, really? A lot of disrespect for Cutter Bowley.
If Cutter was kind of in my Daniel Jones territory, it's like, if Cutter wouldn't throw it to the other team, there's enough to kind of like there, but it's like, but he does. This was always my Daniel Jones problem. It's like, if Daniel didn't turn the ball over, which he's not right now, and he's playing awesome, it's like, if he didn't turn it over, I think he could be pretty good. But to me, it's like, think about it in these terms. Oklahoma shut out Kent State and still didn't cover.
Yeah, I bet Kent State, so.
I guess people are forgetting, like, Hawkins, like, it looked like it was a, last year in this game, and granted, he's got more skill position talent. I'm not sure their offensive line's that much better. I just kind of think this is also the vibes play, where it's like everybody's super down on Texas, and then it's like they're going to get into a game where their offense doesn't have to be great and their defense can kind of eat a little bit. And I think everyone's going to remember really quickly, like, oh yeah, Michael Hawkins, like, people felt bad for him in this game last year.
Yeah, but Arch holds the ball so long, and that Oklahoma defensive front is so nasty. I see
Arch
Texas
is bad.
Struggle.
He's not as bad as Hawkins.
I just don't know if Texas can get to 20 on Oklahoma.
I don't know if they have to. Do you know what they averaged on offense last year with Michael Hawkins Jr.? 12.8.
I mean, but you mentioned it. The supporting cast. This is a different Oklahoma team than it was a year ago. Is the offensive line awesome? Okay, maybe not, but they actually have competent, healthy receivers.
He's a G6 quarterback.
Competent, healthy running backs. You don't have to be a world beater if you have a supporting cast, and he does. And I actually think that Ben Arbuckle's system suits him pretty well. So I mean, I'm not going to judge Michael Hawkins based on what he showed against Kent State. I mean, that's a glorified scrimmage, you know?
I know, so, but he wasn't even that impressive in that. I guess that's kind of my whole point. All right, let's get to the nightcap because this is just, I mean, there's not enough screens. So we have Florida at A&M with the classic, is Florida something different now that they've got Dallas Wilson?
No.
We have, I tend to think that you're right, but I am open to, like, it is obvious. Like, to me, I was wondering if there's a little Ole Miss last year with Trey Harris. Like, when Ole Miss didn't have Trey Harris, their offense looked really clunky, but when they did have him, it's like, oh, it looks pretty good. I am wondering with Wilson if it's the same thing, because Lagway, that was unquestionably Lagway's best game of the year.
For sure.
Okay, but I tend to agree. I also think I'm leaving room for A&M in that I think that they fund the roster at elite level. I am not in this, okay, this is September A&M, and once October hits, all of a sudden. But like, I'm in the they've got to prove it to me category. So I think that one's super interesting. We've also got Michigan at USC. Like, can USC stop the run?
I doubt it. I mean, Justice Haynes is looking like the best running back in America right now. Good luck, USC. Like, that's I mean, this. Okay, there's a lot of teams around the country that have huge two-week stretches in October that are going to define their season. I already mentioned Ole Miss with road games against Georgia and Oklahoma back-to-back. This is a season, maybe even a coaching tenure-defining stretch here for Lincoln Riley, starting this week against Michigan, then next week at Notre Dame. Like, if Lincoln Riley's ever going to do anything at USC, it starts this month, and it starts with that game, you know, on Saturday.
All right, and then also we have Georgia at Auburn. So a couple of things. Number one, like, it's now, like, I think the next 2 weeks define Hugh Freeze's future at Auburn. If he goes 0-2, I think that he's going to step away for health reasons, air quotes. I also have this feeling. I think Georgia loses one of the next two. I don't know which one, but I think they lose one of the next two.
What's your issue? Like, why do you, why are you out
love,
on Georgia?
I don't love the defensive front. I don't think the secondary is quite as good. And then I still don't have the Gunnar Stockton gene. Like, I don't think he's like aggressively bad. I think every Georgia fan just talked themselves into because they didn't like Carson Beck's personality, which was totally fine. I got you.
Oh, sure. I mean,
there was a lot to not like.
Would definitely be a better hang than Carson
right.
Beck.
There's a lot to not like, but I never watched Georgia last year and just was like, he's the problem. I was
it's like if Gunnar Stockton had the supporting cast that Stetson Bennett had and had Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers and had a nasty defense with Jalen Carter and all that, he would be more than sufficient. He doesn't have all that though. So yeah, this Georgia team is probably going to take a second regular season loss.
This is also a Jordan Hare vibes play. Like Jordan Hare at night. There's been a lot of dreams have went to die there. All right. And then the other interesting one to me, South Carolina at LSU. I don't know how LSU is favored by 9, which means we're going to look up and see like they're going to win this game by 3 scores somehow. But if I've got an offensive line that's struggling to block, I do not want to see South Carolina's defense. And I also think with Sellers, like, this is a good spot for him where it's like as aggressive as LSU wants to be on defense, like he might be able to get off script. Like we saw Trinidad Chambliss. Part of the reason why Ole Miss won that game was he was able to really hurt him with his legs.
Yeah. We could also see LSU, you know, bait him into a few turnovers.
Absolutely.
I would stay away from I would stay away from this one. I mean,
I think it's interesting because I think I was low on South Carolina coming into the year, but I also think that they're not quite as bad as everyone's been writing them off to be. But I also think we've weirdly done the same thing with LSU. It's almost like I feel like the conversation around LSU is like they have 3 losses. They have 1 on the road to the 4th team in the country. Like, we can argue about whether or not Ole Miss stays as the 4th team. But it's like, there's nothing. It was a 1-score loss. Like, it wasn't as if, like, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, but the one thing we thought LSU was good at, defense, Ole Miss kind of said, y'all aren't good at that either, you know?
They did
so
only put up 24,
suddenly
though.
Suddenly figures it out. Like,
I mean, they got held to 24.
LSU's offense is just a shell of what we thought it would be, and they can't run the football. So, I mean, I don't think there's any chance. I've already written LSU off. Yeah, I have, because I don't think they're going to make the college football playoff. They're going to lose three or more regular season games. It's just, you know, when are those losses going to happen? I think I've seen enough. I know this isn't a legitimate national title contender, not by a long shot.
No, I also think, though, it's like it depends on the health of their offensive line. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasenstein joins the program. Get his thoughts on the Grizzlies, who were in action again last night for preseason. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hasenstein. Eric, we've seen two preseason games. Is there anything to take away?
You clearly miss your best two players and your biggest man of all.
I think that's pretty obvious.
And your best athlete big that's out as well. So, yeah, I mean, look, I thought in first game, you saw what Ty Jerome and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope can do. And then you saw some rust on the tires for your rookie and Cedric Cowell. And, you know, guys, just trying to find a rhythm in a 50-point quarter doesn't help. No one was happy about that in the locker room. Too many turnovers, too many offensive rebounds, too much one-on-one. And then, you know, you sit guys down in game two, Boston's playing their first game. They're trying to figure out what they're going to look like without Tatum. You got Jaylen Brown, Derek White, you know, Sam Hauser out there. And it's like, okay, that's like three of their probable starting five, especially, you know, one's a multiple time all-star, one's an Olympic gold medalist. And you're starting guys that are getting their first look, you know, and that's kind of the way this works. But the things that I think stand out that you're concerned about, and everybody's talking about them, are the, you know, the lack of rebounding and the size in the middle, the rim protection. I feel like they're still figuring out the nuances of the offense. At times it kind of breaks down and guys are forced to go one-on-one, and maybe you make a play, maybe you don't. But it's not, you know, it's not time to hit a panic button or anything. I mean, it's October 9th or whatever the date is today, and we got a long way to go with this.
Yeah, so Eric, how close are we to declaring that at some point, maybe sooner rather than later, there could be a role for Cam Spencer in this rotation? Because when you lose a guy like Desmond Bane, I don't care who all you bring in, you're just going to need shooting, especially in this league. Shooting was not a strength of this team last night, but Cam Spencer, I think he brings a little bit of that. From your bird's eye view, I mean, are we getting to a point here where this guy could have a role?
Well, I think he's very similar to, thank you. Tom, I'm picking up Chick-fil-A in your honor, buddy.
Nice. Appreciate you.
There we go. Yeah, unfortunately not at your store, or else that would be a very long road trip for a sandwich.
I bet the pricing would be good, though.
Come and see us sometime. Next time you're going to Mammoth Cave, you know, just stop on in.
I have no idea where that is, but yeah, it sounds great.
Most people don't.
Hey, look, if it's working for you. I think Ty Jerome kind of fills some of that. I think Cam will have a place to come in and be able to, you know, knock down some shots. He's a great free throw shooter. You know, again, it's you're asking a young guy to learn the speed of the NBA and you see, and Harrington talked about this morning, like when he talked about Javon Small. In college, these guys may have that burst. They may have that extra step. They may be that much quicker than the guy guarding them. this is the NBA. I mean, this is why I always laughed when people would be like, when I first moved here in 01 and the Grizzlies are new and, you know, people don't understand the you know, intricacies of the NBA. And I had been covering it for 5 years where they're like, oh, the Memphis Tigers could beat the Grizzlies. And I'm like, you're out of your mind. Like, it's not even a debate. And they would just argue till they were blue in the face. And I'm like, how many All-Americans are on your team? One, DeJuan Wagner, maybe. Kelly Wise was an all-conference player. The Grizzlies have nine. They're bigger. They're faster. They're stronger. And so that athleticism that you had the edge in college, it's not that you're at a disadvantage, but it's not as distinct an advantage. And, you know, when you play with that advantage all of your life and then it's not there, you got to figure it out, and you got to figure it out quick. I mean, one of the most, you know, glaring examples of that that I remember in my time here was Javaris Crittenden, who then obviously went on to do things that were against the law and, mm-hmm. and ended up incarcerated. And I, Javaris and I were always cool. I was really sad to hear he took that path. And, you know, you watch that documentary and you kind of see how some of it went down. But at Georgia Tech, he just blew by guys. He was a 6'4 athletic guard that was just faster and could jump higher than other guys, but didn't have a great jump shot. He got to the NBA, and it's like all of a sudden, everybody's kind of like got that athleticism and leaping ability, and you're playing against some of the best players in the world, and it can eat you up. So I think when you talk about Cam's a smart basketball player. He's a super hard worker. I mean, I think it was last night, Lang Whitaker told the story that on media day, because the practice court was being used, Cam wanted to get up shots, so he just went into the main court where the lights were off, and he just started shooting on his own. I love hearing that. And so I think there's a role, but where does that role fall in when you have Scottie Pippen Jr., when you have Ja, when you have Ty Jerome? It's going to be the spots. And he's the type of guy, just like last year when he got into the, you know, argument with Kevin Durant, when he gets his moment, he's going to make the most of it, and he's going to try to be as professional as he can, and he's not going to back away from that moment. So I like what he does, and you know, the Grizzlies were happy to get him, and it adds to the roster with a little extra point guard depth.
Eric, I think this is the other question I have right now, because I know Harrington was talking about this, and you mentioned you were listening to that segment. I do think he's right. Like, I think first off, we got to give Cobb, I don't know if you got to watch last night. Eric, where has Jitty been summering? Because his tan looks phenomenal.
Yeah, they did that thing on media day where they said your favorite picture from the summer, and he was clearly on some island in the Bahamas or, you know, the Cayman Islands, something like that. It was not a United States beach that it was at, but that was good. I got actually to say, I get a chance to say hello to him before the game last night. I didn't get a chance Monday. Yeah, John's John, and he did exactly what he does, and Chris, I thought, pointed that out. He's got a nose for the basketball, and we kind of talked about it last night on the broadcast. This guy just reads the ball off the rim really well, and when you're not 6'9 and, you know, jumping through the roof, you have to find the ways where you can contribute, and that's clearly something that is a skill that is not only an instinct that's God-given, but also a learned behavior of learning angles, learning where guys are, and attacking the ball. And I thought, you know, his ability to rebound will get him some minutes. I think as Cedric Cowart gets more comfortable in the NBA game, and I know a lot of people are already just hammering the social media and talking about, can this kid play? Let's not forget, this kid hasn't played for 11 months. It's like, hey, you played 6 games at Washington State, go play in the NBA. It's not an easy thing to do, but you watched what happened in the second half when, you know, Drew Hill was talking earlier today with the guys on before you with J&J and said, quit trying to be perfect. Just go play ball. And I think right now that's where it is. Everybody's trying to put the right foot forward, and you can see the hesitation. It's not instinctual right now. It's a little more reactionary, and that's a dangerous way to play in the NBA, because if you're not on in every aspect of your game and you're playing reactionary, the number can turn ugly in a hurry, and we've seen that.
Well, so the whole thing, too, that they're trying to implement to Amas Isolo is speed, speed, speed. That's what I keep hearing, is that they're trying to accelerate the pace, which is kind of mind-blowing when you figure, like, all right, I was covering the team when Taylor Jenkins got the job, and the whole thing then was pace and space. Now you're moving on from that, and you're going even faster. Well, it's going to be hard to do that, naturally, in a preseason game when you don't have Ja Morant, you don't have Ty Jerome, you don't have Scottie Pippen Jr., all the guys who would be the ones facilitating and directing it. So, like, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't even feel like you can get an accurate sense of, like, what this offense is going to be under those circumstances.
No, I don't think so. You're never going to get an accurate sense of it if, you know, again, it relies on Ja being as healthy as he possibly can and playing as many games as he possibly can. There's no replacing what he brings to the table. And that's just the bottom line. And I get it. I get what people see. Like, we see it. I had a friend text me and said, you sounded a little frustrating. And I said, it wasn't frustration. It's just like, if you're not going to have Jaw, that's fine. But that doesn't mean you walk it up, you know, you get it up the court, you make one pass, and you try to go 1-on-3. You still got to figure out how to make the offense work, because there are going to be nights he's not there. And you don't want to just throw your hands up and say, oh, we don't have Jaw, just take the L. You got to find ways to win games like that. If you want to be a playoff team, and whether people believe they are or not, and some people don't, some people do. They believe that they are going to be in that mix. And if they believe that, then they have to figure out how this system and everything works. And yes, Tuomas Isalo coached the last 9 games and he coached the playoffs. That's not enough time to really understand what the offense is designed to do, especially when you don't have your best screen setter, your best rim protector, and your second best scorer, and a guy that draws attention, and then obviously one of the best breakdown defense guys off the dribble in the world playing. It's just not the same. And you saw the first quarter in game one where the starters played well and they knocked down shots and they moved the basketball and guys were willing to catch and shoot. And then you saw new faces and young guys trying to make their mark. And the guy that shined the most was Jalen Wells, and he's got experience, and Tonti was fine, but you know, it's tough. And the continuity thing matters. Both nights you've played teams with guys that have been together for a few years at least, and top tier level players, and you don't have a Cade Cunningham, you don't have a Jaylen Brown, you don't have a Derek White. And that's not to cry in your beer. That's to say, that's just a fact. So you got to find a way to combat that if those guys aren't available, and do this, you know, to the best of your ability to learn what's happening. I do love the fact that they're the first 3 are at home, and then you got a layoff before you go on the road for the final 2. So, you know, use this opportunity to get in the gym and try to, you know, get it going. And a lot of coaches will tell you when they have new faces, don't judge the offense until after the first month of the season. There's going to be nights where it looks great. There's going to be nights where it looks bad because it didn't click. When they've got 20 games under their belt and seem to know it better, that's when you can start really going, okay, here's the time to judge. That's just really hard to tell a fan, because fans want to see, you know, instant results. And let's be honest, the offense for the Grizzlies over the years, other than the year where they were banged up, was not the problem. They were one of the top offensive teams in the game. That was not the issue. The issue was injuries. The issue was defensive continuity. And the issue was, you know, basically filling gaps when guys were out. And that's, you know, that happens to everybody when you have injuries. And I've never seen a team that's had so many key injuries in a stretch. And it's tough when you're a part of it, because you're just like, man, cut us a break. And then obviously we got the news right before preseason started that Ja wasn't going to play. But I would rather him sit now than sit, you know, mid-December, early January, when they need to start turning that corner and becoming who they are.
Did you think Jalen Wells looked better last night?
Okay. Yes and no. I mean, again, coming off the injury.
Give me both cases.
The good case is, yeah, he looks confident in his shot. He's able to absorb contact. Still trying to figure out the hesitation moves, and I think it was Brown read it beautifully, and Jalen put the brakes on like he did, and people didn't know it. He read it, and he blocked the shot easily. He dribbled it off his foot. It's just like there's still that split-second hesitation sometimes that will come with more confidence, more trusting, and more understanding of the NBA game. But I did think I thought he looked solid. I mean, like, he's making shots and gets to the free throw line and a willing catch and shoot shooter and was actually one of the few guys making them in the early going. So yeah, I thought it was fine. Again, coming off that horrific injury where it was thankfully less than it could have been. It still kept him out the rest of the year. You know, that's a lot of time away from the NBA game and then to get back into it. And like, I know summer league, people get enamored with some of the things you see. Summer league is summer league. This is a whole different ball game. Like 90% of the guys that played in Las Vegas are not playing on an NBA roster right now. They're just not. They're overseas. They're, you know, working out, hoping to catch on with a G League team somewhere or something, but they're not playing on training camp rosters. And so you can look great in those, and you should look great. I mean, I always use the Wayne Sell.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.